fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Oh, I've got that Friday feeling. I cannot wait to get talking to you today. 1-888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. That's a toll-free number. If you want to call in and talk to me, 1-888-914-9149. It's toll-free. The call's on me. You can also email the show, kale@relevantradio.com, or follow us on Twitter. My personal account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, at Cale Clark. That's my handle. Grab onto it. Hang on for the ride. We also have a show account as well, at Cale Clark Show. And you know what? Today, the 23rd of April, is the birthday of one Willie Shakespeare. William Shakespeare, that's right, was born on this day in 1564. And he actually also died on this day. He died on April 23rd, 1616. That's not too many people can say that they died on their birthday. And that was also their heavenly birthday, I guess one could say. Hopefully it's a heavenly birthday for Shakespeare. And we have to talk about the question, was Shakespeare Catholic? Now, if you are not a Shakespeare fan, don't worry, don't turn off your radio, because number one, this is a great mystery story. And number two, even if you don't like Shakespeare, and many people don't, and maybe this is a question we could ask you guys, maybe this is a great listener question. Have you ever read Shakespeare of your own free will? Or were you forced into it in high school English class? And I'm going to tell a little story about that later on. But there's a great Catholic mystery to this. And it also involves one of the great heroes of the Catholic faith, one of the great English martyrs during the bloody persecution of Catholics after King Henry VIII switched over and started his own church called the Anglican Church. Massive persecution broke out against the church. And one of the great martyrs of this period was St. Edmund Campion. And if you don't know anything about Campion, he's one of my great heroes. This is an incredibly inspiring story. I'm going to share this with you later on. And believe it or not, Shakespeare allegedly talked about Campion in coded language in one of his plays. And I'll tell you what that is as we get going. And some of us, as I said, we're kind of forced into reading Shakespeare in high school. And I don't know. Maybe some of us needed to be, I think Lucas at one point, I think producer Lucas was thinking about, was inspired by Shakespeare to become a writer himself at one point, right? Isn't that true?
That's true, yeah. And then, you know.
What talked you out of that, or who talked you out of that?
Well, a person by the name of Matt Foley.
Oh, the motivational speaker, Matt Foley.
The motivational speaker, yeah. He had some really uplifting things to say. And so I was like, you know what? All right, I'm going to listen to you.
Okay, well, let's hear what Matt Foley would say about someone thinking about that type of career.
Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, we got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Huh? Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Okay. And that is, of course, a clip from Saturday Night Live. The late, great Chris Farley playing motivational speaker Matt Foley. And, of course, later on in that skit, he says, there'll be plenty of time for writing when you're living in a van down by the river.
I live in a van down by the river.
That's right. And, by the way, this could be a topic for another fun show some other time. Chris Farley apparently was a devout Catholic, guys. A devout Catholic.
Wow.
And strangely enough, apparently he was also the class clown growing up. I can't imagine that for one moment. But actually, you know, here's another interesting factoid. Do you know who Chris Farley's brother is?
That I do not know.
His name is Jim Farley. I don't know if he has any other siblings, but his brother's name is Jim Farley. He's the CEO of Ford Motor Company. Did you know that? It's incredible.
No idea.
Yeah, so
that's interesting.
So Jim, if you're listening to the show, if you are a devout Catholic and you're listening to the show, can you please send me a Mustang Mach-E. I want one of those new electric Mustangs. My father worked at Ford, by the way, for his whole career, so I'm a Ford guy. I want to try one of these E-Mustangs, and maybe I could be like the celebrity spokesperson or something. You probably have other plans, but just in case, I am open to those phone calls.
Never hurts to ask.
It never hurts to ask. You have not because you ask not. That's what the Bible says. But let's talk about whether or not Shakespeare himself, Bill Shakespeare, as Matt Foley says, is Catholic or was Catholic. Well, someone who wrote an interesting article about this was a convert, oddly enough, from Anglicanism to Catholicism, Father Dwight Longnecker. I don't know if you've heard of Father Dwight Longnecker, but he actually wrote a book called More Christianity, which I thought was a great title. It's kind of a response to C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. And C.S. Lewis even says in Mere Christianity that this only gets you in the door, this concept of mere Christianity. What are the basic beliefs, the bare minimum that you need to have to be a Christian? But he says you've got to join a church. You've got to, that gets you in the door, but you've got to pick a room. You've got to pick a church. And we would say, well, there's only one true church, but that's another argument. So Father Dwight Longnecker, when he came into the Catholic Church, he was an Anglican cleric, an Anglican priest. He was ordained as a married Catholic priest. He got a dispensation from celibacy, so he's a practicing Catholic priest right now in the United States. And he wrote this book called More Christianity. It's sort of, hey, well, here's the missing argument. But he also wrote an essay on this for the National Catholic Register on this topic that Shakespeare was actually Catholic. And here's the top 10 reasons that Shakespeare was Catholic, according to Father Dwight Longnecker. Well, one of the things he mentions off the top is that if you're looking for a book on this, by the way, if you're a Shakespeare fan and you want to do some more research on this, Joseph Pierce has written a book called The Quest for Shakespeare. And he's also written a series of guides on classic works, works of Shakespeare, published by Ignatius Press. And producer Lucas, what are those called? Those
Ignatius Critical Editions.
That's right, the Ignatius Critical Editions, yes.
Yes, and you've read, highly recommend.
Yeah, they give little footnotes where it gives some of the Catholic background on some of Shakespeare's plays, right?
And that's right, yeah. And just in general, because let's face it, sometimes Shakespeare's hard to read.
That is true, to be sure. And so those are by Joseph Pierce. So he also wrote this book called The Quest for Shakespeare and whether or not he's Catholic. So anyway, here's the top 10 reasons why he in all likelihood was. Number one, there were plenty of secret Catholics in Elizabethan England. Elizabeth I, obviously, she created kind of a Catholic sort of a ban on Catholicism, of course, and she turned England into essentially a police state, a Protestant police state. Everyone had to swear loyalty to the Queen, who was Protestant. Everyone had to attend the state Anglican Church. And actually, attendance was taken. And some people refused to go, and those were known as recusants. They were recusants. They were Catholics who just protested against this, ironically protesting against the Protestants, and decided not to go. And if you didn't go, you were actually fined, imprisoned, and then you were fined again. Wow. And the Catholic Church eventually in England went underground, and there was this secret network that developed. And this is really stuff out of spy novels. And in the past, we've talked about, speaking of spies, how even in the movies, James Bond apparently comes from a family of recusant Catholics in Scotland. They were in his ancestral home at Skyfall. Remember that movie in Skyfall? I think it came out in 2015. Adele. Let the sky fall. I'm not going to sing for you, but there was a priest hole in the Bond ancestral home, a hidden passageway where they could hide priests who would celebrate masses. So that's reason number one. There are a lot of secret Catholics in Elizabeth's England, and quite possibly Bill Shakespeare is one of them. Number two, Shakespeare's family. By the way, Lucas, I'm hearing an echo here. Number two, Shakespeare's family. He did have secret Catholics within his family. These recusant Catholics, and the word recusant means refuser. Refused to adhere to Anglicanism. And one of them was Shakespeare's mother. Shakespeare's mother was from a family, her maiden name was Arden. And that was a very well-known, very influential, recusant Catholic family in Warwickshire. In fact, one of the Ardens, one of the relatives, was actually executed for hiding a priest in one of these priest holes. And John Shakespeare, William Shakespeare's father, was fined for refusing to attend Anglican services. Shakespeare's daughter, by the way, and her name was Susanna, Shakespeare's daughter was recorded as being a Catholic. And in case I forget, remind me to tell you more about Shakespeare's wife in just a couple minutes. I think you'll find this really interesting. Number three, the third possible reason, the top 10 reasons that Shakespeare is Catholic, according to Father Dwight Longnecker, a Catholic pamphlet was hidden in the rafters of Shakespeare's birthplace. And this is where St. Edmund Campion comes in again. I'm going to tell you more about him. So very often during these times, Catholics would produce these pamphlets, and they would kind of be spread around and passed around secretly, and evangelization tracts, if you will. And the pamphlet in question was actually written by St. Edmund Campion, who was executed in 1581 at Tyburn Tree in London, hanged, drawn, and quartered. It was an absolutely gruesome execution. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. And the young Bill Shakespeare was living in the house where this pamphlet was found at the time that it was hidden. So that could be a clue. Number four, Shakespeare probably had a Catholic wedding. Oh, yes, I will get to talk about his wife here. Shakespeare married, you know what his wife's name was? Does anybody know? Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway. He married Anne Hathaway in 1582. Why are you laughing, Karen?
Do you think that she, the actress Anne Hathaway, took that name? I don't know if that's her
You know, it's
it makes me wonder.
It's funny that you said that. It's funny that you said that because guess what? There is a crazy conspiracy theory out there on the internet that has shaken a lot of people. And I'll tell you what it is. Anne Hathaway's husband is named William. No, I'm only kidding. No, no, I wish it was. But her husband's actual name is Adam Shulman. Adam Shulman. But guess what? Adam Shulman, I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. This is not a joke. Adam Shulman looks exactly like William Shakespeare.
Googling now.
Google it now. Get on your, get on the, yeah, just, so there is a theory that has been floated out there that the actress Anne Hathaway and her husband Adam Shulman are actually time travelers.
Okay.
That maybe. They are, in fact, yeah, the Bill sure. Shakespeare and his original wife. So, a lot of chatter about this on the internet. I don't know if you compare pictures of this Adam Shulman guy and Will Shakespeare. It's wow. It's I gotta admit, there may be something to this.
Do you think that's Anne Hathaway's actual name when she was born?
I don't know. I don't know that. Well, you'll have to do some crack research on this.
I think Adam Shulman looks like any handsome person today. I don't know. It's like William Shakespeare. He's like, I think William Shakespeare with a big Elizabethan collar and kind of weird.
Some are saying that this is a sign of the enduring love between Shakespeare and his wife. They're so in love that they came back for each other in the modern age.
Okay.
All I can say is that history hath a way of repeating itself. Get it? Hathaway?
It was right there.
Yeah, it was there. I must admit I stole that from a guy on Twitter. But anyways, I'm not giving him credit. So check's not in the mail for that one. I stole the joke, but it's a good one. It's a good one. And no, I'm not implying that these people are reincarnated or anything like that. No, but I just think it's kind of ironic that, hey, I wondered that too, Karen. I wondered whether she took that as a stage name because Shakespeare's wife was, in fact, Anne Hathaway. So let me know what you can dig up. But I will tell you this. Way back in 1582, Shakespeare did marry the original Anne Hathaway, and they didn't get married. They didn't get married in their local Anglican church, but they scooted off, and they got married by Father John Frith at a tiny little church in a nearby village called Temple Grafton. Now, 4 years after Shakespeare got married to Anne Hathaway, the government accused Father Frith of secretly being a Catholic priest. So, apparently he was an Anglican priest, but may have been a Catholic on the sly. Anyways, was it a secret Catholic wedding? The plot thickens. Mm-hmm. Well, what about, okay, so this is point number five. So this is reason number five that Shakespeare might have been a Catholic in this top 10 here. Shakespeare wrote very sympathetically about Catholics in his plays. Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet, Friar Francis in Much Ado About Nothing. And his writings also betray an intimate knowledge of Catholic practice and belief. So this is sprinkled throughout his plays. And one of the plays, in fact, that may have contained some Catholic stuff, and I'm going to mention this. I might as well mention it now. Actually, when I was in high school, the Shakespeare play that we did, I was kind of hoping that we would do Romeo and Juliet in grade 10. But because I know I was kind of, I thought it might help me with girls or something,
sure.
You know, to try to be romantic.
Yes.
And in fact, probably the closest we ever got was the Romeo and Juliet movie in the 90s starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes as Juliet. I think we have a clip of that, don't we, Lucas?
We do. And okay. Be warned, it's pretty terrible.
Well, just play it and we'll judge for ourselves.
Everyone gets to be embarrassed.
We'll let you judge. The listener judge. Here we go.
For saints have hands that pilgrims' hands do touch. And palm to palm is holy palmer's kiss.
Have not saints' lips and holy palmer's too?
I, a pilgrim, lips that they must use in prayer.
Well then, dear saint, let lips do what hands do. They pray, grant thou, lest faith turn to despair.
Saints do not move, though grant for prayer's sake.
Then move not, nor my prayer's effect I take.
Wow. Pretty steamy there.
Whoa, I tell you, it's getting hot in here, or is it just Claire Danes and Leo DiCaprio?
It's like a little Claire Danes and a little Leo DiCaprio.
Well, isn't that the case? They're quite a bit older now. They're definitely Gen Xers like me. And I will say this, though. Lucas, you say it's a terrible film. My wife is probably going to call in and give you a piece of her mind because she loves that movie.
She loves
this movie.
I like the play, but the movie itself, it's just a little too much for me.
A little cringeworthy.
But, yeah.
Okay. Well, I will say this, though. Claire Danes... One show I do love, and maybe I shouldn't. This is definitely a PG-13 show. Homeland, if you've ever seen it with Claire Danes, love that show. And you know who else is in that show? Mandy Patinkin, the guy who is of course a famous stage actor. He's probably done some Shakespeare himself, and the Princess Bride. He's of course in that movie, Inigo Montoya, and that's my wife's favorite movie, Princess Bride. So there you go. Anyway, so it's like 6 degrees of, I don't know what, Bill Shakespeare. But anyways, let's get back to, was Shakespeare Catholic? All these side notes. It's Friday. We can have some fun with this.
He was very Catholic friendly. Very Catholic curious if he wasn't Catholic.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure. Well, so he talked about some Catholic stuff in his plays. The sixth reason in Father Longnecker's top 10 reasons why Shakespeare was Catholic is that he condemned the Tudor regime. Hamlet is a play about social disintegration, incest, madness, infertility, and murder, all of which the Catholics accused the Tudor regime of Henry VIII and Elizabeth of being all part of. So there's that. Reason number 7 in the top 10 reasons why Shakespeare was Catholic. He links social upheaval and chaos with Protestantism. All right, so if there are any Protestants listening, don't be offended by that, but Hamlet said, Hamlet and his friend Horatio are students at Wittenberg. Now, as you know, Wittenberg was the center of Protestantism. That's where Martin Luther, of course, nailed his theses on the door of the castle church at Wittenberg, and that really touched off the Protestant Revolution. Denmark is mentioned as a newly Protestant regime in Hamlet, so... He's trying to make this link that the Protestant Revolution brought all kinds of chaos into society. Reason number eight why Shakespeare is Catholic. He may have visited the English College in Rome. In 2009, archivists at the Venerable English College in Rome uncovered two mysterious entries that might have been written by William Shakespeare using an alias. Because of the fact that these are dangerous times, that you had to be a Catholic in secret, English Catholics would travel under assumed names, like a pen name, if you will. And Shakespeare would have known about pen names. And the dates on these entries at the English College match the time when Shakespeare's whereabouts were unknown. Nobody knew where he was. So who knows? Maybe he went to the English college in Rome. We don't know that for sure, but it could be. It could be. Reason number 9. See, this is a great mystery story. It's a great mystery. We're weaving a mystery here. Reason number 9 why Shakespeare might have been Catholic. After his retirement, Shakespeare bought a property in London as a safe house for priests. And the property that he bought was called the Blackfriars Gatehouse. And he paid an exorbitant sum for this house. And the assumption is that he bought it to keep priests safe and to have secret masses there. And finally, the last reason that Father Dwight Longnecker gives, who of course was raised as an evangelical, became an Anglican minister, and was received in the Catholic Church in 1995. Reason number 10, Shakespeare was reported to have died as a Catholic. He left almost everything in his will to his Catholic daughter, Susanna. You know how much he left to his Protestant family members? Not a penny. Not a penny. In the late 1600s, an Anglican minister wrote that Shakespeare died a papist, a loyal Catholic. Now, papist, of course, is a derogatory term that has been leveled at Catholics since Reformation times. So there you go. Was Shakespeare Catholic? I think there may be some very, very good reasons to think that. And so there you go.
Would that be so bad?
Well, no, not at all.
I think it would be great, yes.
I think it
would why people are so... why? Well, I guess maybe the persecution was pretty intense. But boy, he sure left a lot of evidence to point to the fact that he knew a lot about Catholicism.
Yeah, absolutely. If he wasn't Catholic, he certainly disguised it very well. But yeah, it's kind of hidden in plain sight, isn't it? All this evidence on Shakespeare. So,
but what a dramatic buildup of his life, though, too. You know, it's like, well, he was the ultimate writer. He left us wondering.
he really was. Yeah, absolutely. He was so great at these mysteries and leaving clues. And so that's the mystery. And we're going to tell you about somebody that he wrote about in coded language in one of his plays, St. Edmund Campion. His story of martyrdom is incredibly inspiring. We'll share it with you after the break. It's Cale Clark Show on Friday. We'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Yeah, that's right. People keep asking me to have a dedicated karaoke segment where it's just 20 minutes of just straight up singing. Would you like that?
We could use that as the next pledge drive giveaway.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, that's right.
Cale sings.
Cale
sings. Sing with Cale.
If you can call it that, yeah. Yeah,
cool tunes with Cale.
Yeah, and dogs are howling in alleyways all over America.
Egbert can join in.
Yeah, that's right. Well, listen, speaking of heroes, one of my great heroes in the Catholic faith is St. Edmund Campion, who lived around the time of William Shakespeare. And it is said that Shakespeare even wrote about him secretly in one of his plays. And I'm going to tell you what that is later on. But let me tell you a little bit about Campion's life. And by the way, if you're looking for an inspiring read, a great book, look no further than the book on Campion's life. And it was just called Edmund Campion, A Life. And it was written by Evelyn Waugh, published by Ignatius Press. I believe you can get an edition published by Ignatius. And it's a really, really good read. So inspiring what the English martyrs went through. Let me tell you about Campion. By the way, Campion was born in 1540. And his family had been Catholic until the reign of Elizabeth I. Sometime after 1558, when he was about 18 years old, his family went over to the Anglican side. And Edmund Campion was a brilliant student, a skilled orator. At the age of 15, he entered St. John's College in Oxford. Just 2 years after that, he became a junior fellow. He was very much noticed at court. And in fact, when he was at Oxford, he was chosen to give a speech in the presence of the Queen herself. And a member of the Queen's court said that Campion was, quote, one of the diamonds of England, end of quote. That's a great description. And so after he finished his education at Oxford, a bishop convinced him to become an Anglican priest, which he did. But he was really not so sure about doing that, because when he was an undergrad, he started seriously studying the fathers of the church. And the more he, it's very much like what Cardinal Newman said, St. Cardinal Newman, to be deep in history is to cease to be Protestant. Because when he started reading the fathers, he just couldn't, the Anglican church just looked less and less like the church that Jesus established or would have recognized. And so, long story, he got very, very restless, very remorseful about being in the Anglican church. He felt like the fullness of the truth was not there. And by the way, I'm going to read some stuff from Father Charles Connor's book, Defenders of the Faith in Word and Deed. He's got a nice little chapter on Campion there. It's very concise, very well done. And he actually went to Ireland. Campion went to Ireland to kind of sort out this whole process. He really wanted to think about it. He was very restless. And eventually he realized that he had to become Catholic. He knew he had to get out of England, become Catholic. And that's what he did. He went to the Spanish Netherlands and the University of Douai in Belgium. And that's where he kind of learned Catholicism at a deeper level. And he decided to leave his Anglican orders and become a Catholic priest. And he eventually became a Jesuit. He joined the Society of Jesus and decided to go back to his native England. And it's a really long story, but let me just skip ahead to a really cool section here. So when he got back into England and he was trying to evangelize, this was all highly dangerous. He was a wanted man. And he wrote these two books or these two pamphlets. One of them was called The Ten Reasons, the Decem Rationes. And this may have been one of the pamphlets, who knows, that was in Shakespeare's attic that they found hidden. And it was a pretty good apologetic on why the Catholic Church was the true church, these 10 reasons of Campion's. You can look it up. You can Google it. And another one that he put out came to be known as Campion's Brag. Campion's Brag. And that wasn't the actual title. He wrote it to the Privy Council. It was really an appeal to the intellectual classes of British society to try to get a fair hearing for the Catholic case. But it became known as Campion's Brag. And actually, one year, one of my fantasy football teams was called Campion's Brag. Everyone thought I meant to say Champion's Brag. I was like kind of hoping they would look it up and become Catholic. That was probably a stretch, probably too much to hope for. But anyways, here's what he said about the Jesuits and how they plan to never give up, no matter how many martyrs there were going to have to be, to try to once again make England Catholic. Here's what he said about this. He said, and I quote, "In touching our society," and that's, of course, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, "let it be known to you that we have made league, all the Jesuits in the world, whose succession and multitude must overreach all the practices of England. We have made league cheerfully to carry the cross you shall lay upon us, and never to despair your recovery." In other words, never to despair that England would once again be regained for Rome. "While we have a man left to enjoy your Tyburn, or to be racked with your torments, or consumed with your prisons. The expense is reckoned, the enterprise is begun. It is of God. It cannot be withstood. So the faith was planted, so it must be restored." And when he mentioned, we'll never cease to have men who will enjoy your Tyburn. And Tyburn, of course, is a reference to the famous Tyburn tree, which was a site of execution in London, where many of these Catholics who were found out were tried for treason, sedition, and were executed, hanged, drawn, and quartered. It was a brutal way to die. And that, in fact, did happen to Edmund Campion. Eventually, he got caught. He became so famous that just this huge manhunt, this huge dragnet was put out for him. And they caught him when he headed for Norfolk one day. And on the way, he stopped to stay at the home of one Mrs. Yates. It was supposed to be one of these safe houses for priests. And on Sunday morning, July the 16th, 1581, Father Campion offered a mass for a congregation of about 40 people. Unfortunately, one of those people was a traitor. And the home was searched three times, and on the third day, these hiding places for priests were really elaborate. I mean, this is like behind the bookshelf, there's a staircase and all this sort of stuff. They took 3 days to find him in the house, and they finally located him, and they took him with two other priests to the Tower of London. And a sign was pinned on Campion that said, "Campion, the seditious Jesuit." So he was interrogated, he was tortured, he was maltreated, went without sleep. And even the queen herself, because she had seen him speak when he was a student at university, and she was so persuaded by him, she tried to talk him out of this. She said, "Please, you know, renounce the Catholic faith, or you're going to get killed. I'm begging you." But he wouldn't do it. And so Evelyn Waugh, in his book about Edmund Campion, he describes the scene of his interrogation. And here's Evelyn Waugh, and I quote, "They questioned him about his purpose in coming to England, about persons, who was Catholic, about his instructions from Rome. He answered easily and quietly, he had come for the salvation of souls. The harsh, peremptory tones of Queen Elizabeth broke in. Did he acknowledge her as his queen or not? Campion replied that indeed he did recognize her as his lawful queen and governess, and he was bound to her in obedience in all temporal matters. She pressed him with the question of her deposition. He answered with perfect candor that it was a subject upon which theologians were still divided, and began to explain the distinction between," so there's all this sort of stuff. And he started talking about render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, render unto God the things that are God's. But the politicians were not in the mood for a debate on canon law, and they told him that they had no fault to find with him except that he was a papist. Adherence to the church, adherence to the pope, and he said, "That is my greatest glory." And so he was basically told, everything will be forgotten, we'll forget that you ever did all this Catholic stuff if you just renounce it all and go back to the Anglican church. And he said, "Absolutely not. I have no desire to do this whatsoever." And so he was tortured beyond human endurance, but he never lost his peace of soul. He was brought out, even like during times when he was being tortured, he was brought out to debate with the leading Protestant theologians of the day. And he easily defeated them in debate, even though he had no books at his disposal. He had nothing to write with. He was asking for books. "Can you give me some works of St. Augustine?" They're like, "Nope, forget it." And he had nothing but his memory to go on. But he easily defeated these guys in public debates. And they were no match for him. And in fact, there was a poem that was written about how easily he defeated these guys. And here's how it goes. It says, "A Jesuit, a Jebusite, wherefore I you pray? Because he doth teach you the only right way, he professeth the same by learning to prove, and shall we from learning to rack him remove? His reasons were ready, his grounds were most sure, the enemy cannot his force long endure. Campion, in camping on spiritual field, in God's cause his life is ready to yield. Our preachers have preached in pastime and pleasure, and now they be hated for passing all measure. Their wives and their wealth have made them so mute, they cannot nor dare not with Campion dispute." And that, of course, this idea, their wives and their wealth have made them so mute, that's a reference to the married Anglican clergy. They cannot nor dare not with Campion dispute, because he would just destroy them in debate. And he was finally indicted on a charge that was kind of cooked up, that he, one of the cardinals, Cardinal Allen, and two other Jesuits were trying to form a conspiracy to murder Queen Elizabeth. And so Campion replied to these charges as followed. "I protest before God and his holy angels, before heaven and earth, before the world and this bar whereat I stand, which is but a small resemblance of the terrible judgment of the next life, that I am not guilty of any part of the treason contained in the indictment or of any other treason, whatever." I like that. When he was standing at the judgment seat, he said, "This judgment bar here is a small resemblance of the terrible judgment of the next life. And it was a kangaroo court. The trial was not fair. He was unjustly condemned to death. And when he was condemned to death, he said these words. This was his response. He says, "In condemning us, you condemn all your own ancestors, all the ancient priests, bishops, and kings, all that was once the glory of England, this island of saints, and the most devoted child of the See of Peter." So he was appealing to their Catholic history, and it didn't work, obviously. 11 days after he was found guilty at trial, he was killed, and the incredible barbarities with his death. He was incarcerated. He was brought to the Hill of Tyburn, executed with the usual barbarities. And what was interesting, too, is that when he was hanged, drawn, and quartered, and this was just a ghastly way to die. What they would do is they would hang you. They would cut out your internal organs. I don't want to gross you out, but the people at that time, they actually set up scaffolding. People would come and watch this as a spectator sport. They would watch these Catholics and other criminals, quote unquote, be executed. And the very wealthy would have kind of private boxes right at the front so they could see everything happen. And sometimes people were asked to give a speech, and most of the times they wouldn't let the Catholics talk because they'd start preaching. And at any rate, they killed Campion. He was hanged, drawn, and quartered. And even so, he never lost his peace. And when he died, this is what an account of the actual moment of his martyrdom. There was a young man who was there when Campion was being killed, whose name was Henry Walpole, and he was sitting pretty much in the front row. And here's what it says about him. He would have preferred to live under a Catholic regime, but he accepted the change to the Anglican Church without any serious regret. He secured a front place at Tyburn, so he had a front row seat for the execution, so close that when Campion's entrails were torn out by the butcher and thrown into the cauldron of boiling water, a spot of blood splashed upon his coat. In that moment, he was caught into a new life. He crossed the sea, became a priest, and 13 years later, after very terrible sufferings, died the same death as Campion on the gallows at York. I think that is incredibly powerful and moving. Henry Walpole, this young man who was witnessing Campion's execution, a spatter of his blood landed on his coat. And in that moment, he was transformed, and he was so inspired by the martyrdom, he went to study and become a Jesuit priest overseas, was sent back to England, and was martyred himself. Wow. And he actually wrote a poem about this, the man who later died, Henry Walpole. He wrote a poem about Campion, and I'm going to just read it to you here because it's incredibly powerful. This is Henry Walpole, who became a Jesuit priest himself, writing on Campion. He said, "His face was hard, yet mild and sweet his cheer, his prison close, yet free and loose his mind, his torture great, yet small or none his fear, his offers large, yet nothing could him blind. O constant man, O mind, O virtue strange, whom want nor woe, nor fear, nor hope could change. Ye thought perhaps, when learned Campion dies, his pen must cease, his surged tongue be still. But you forget how loud his death yet cries, how far beyond the sound of tongue or quill. You did not know how rare and great a good it was to write those precious gifts in blood." Wow. So that is a very, very powerful account of Campion's martyrdom, and also a young man who was there, spattered with his blood, who went on to be martyred as well for the Catholic cause in England. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. If you want to react to any of that, you can call that number. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after this.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show on this Friday, April 23rd. It's Shakespeare's birthday. It's also the day that he died. And in all likelihood, he was a Catholic. We talked about him, some reasons why we can know this. And also, in his play, Twelfth Night, which is the one I had to study in grade 10, I actually kind of liked it in the end. I was kind of hoping for Romeo and Juliet, try to get some romantic tips for my love life. Well, that didn't work out. My teacher decided to do Twelfth Night, and there's some coded stuff in there about Edmund Campion. And I just told you his story before the break. So if you missed that, check the podcast later. It'll be up about an hour after the show. You should be able to download that from relevantradio.com, from the app. You can stream it there too, or get it wherever fine podcasts are purveyed. We're going to go to the phones right now. Henry is on the line from Chicago. Henry, welcome to the show. What do you think about all this?
Hi. Oh, I think it's great. I'm a professional actor in the Chicago area, and wow. I'm a Catholic, and so this is of special interest to me, and it's always been an interest of mine is of Shakespeare being a closet Catholic.
Yeah.
An interesting point. I can't think of the name slips me, but when Campion first came secretly, came back to England, his companion who came with him, who was a Jesuit, whose name I forget, was actually the brother of one of Shakespeare's school teachers.
No
kidding. So there's another connection there, too. Yeah.
Oh, and, yeah, that just thickens the plot, doesn't it?
Yeah, and apparently the region around where Shakespeare grew up was known for being a hotbed of secret Catholics. Also, too, along with references to, secret references to Campion, on the other side of things, there was a character named Sir John Oldcastle, who lived before the Protestant Reformation, but he was against a lot of Catholic practices, and the Protestants held him up as a hero, as kind of a proto-Protestant.
Oh, really?
And Shakespeare put him in his play, Henry IV, Part 1 and Henry IV, Part 2, and had him, and this man who was held up by the Protestants as kind of a hero, was in Shakespeare's play a buffoon, a liar, a thief.
Wow.
And the family, the descendants of John Oldcastle, were furious, and the editor at the time would not let the play be published unless he changed the name. So he changed the name to Sir John Falstaff. And for anybody who knows the Henry IV plays, he also made him a little more of lovably roguish. Falstaff is a liar, he's a thief, he's pompous, he's full of himself. But originally he was named after this proto-Protestant hero.
Oh, wow.
And another thing that I find fascinating that just strikes me is I remember reading something about how during Queen Elizabeth's time, with all the anti-Catholic literature that was out there, they were really trying to discourage any devotion to the saints. They were saying, you're worshiping them, and you should discourage all this papist devotion to the saints, and there were things that were against it. But Shakespeare, I mean, in one of his most famous speeches in his play Henry V, and Henry V is one of the biggest heroes in English history because he successfully defeated the French in arguably their biggest victory, the Battle of Agincourt, where they were outnumbered hugely, but they crushed the French. And in the play, he's got a famous speech where he's inspiring them to go into battle. And the day on the Catholic calendar is the feast day of St. Crispian. And at a time when all this literature was out there telling people, don't be like the Catholics, don't have devotion to the saints, his, do the whole speech. It's really long, but he makes it a point. Henry V says, tomorrow is St. Crispian's Day. And, this day is called the Feast of St. Crispian. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand tiptoe when this day is named and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He shall see this day and live old age, will yearly on the vigil feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispian. And it goes on.
Wow.
And then he goes on to say that, and Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the end of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. And the famous part, we happy few, we band of brothers. And then he goes on.
Band of brothers,
Yes, and at the end he says that that we will all remember we who fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day. And when you keep in mind all the literature about, you know, drop all this Catholic devotion to saints, then that speech really comes across in your face.
Oh, yeah. Stands out like a sore thumb. Yeah. Henry, let me jump in there. That is incredible, an incredible phone call. That's great information. And I thank you so much for sharing that. I really do appreciate that call. We only have a couple minutes left in the show. So unfortunately, I've got to move on just really quickly because I want to get another call in really quick. But Henry, calling from Chicago, an actor, has worked on Shakespeare, obviously, gave us even more clues there that Shakespeare was Catholic. Really appreciate that, Henry, very, very much. Actually, before we go to this next call, we do have to get one thing in there. Want to make sure we get it in. And it is, of course, because Lucas Holt has been working on this all week. It's the week that was on the Cale Clark Show, and here it is. Don Quixote, or as I affectionately call it, Don Quixote. The laughter is good. That way Lucas can't use his crickets sound effect, which he always wants to pull on me whenever I tell a joke.
I was going to use it, but now I can't use it, so.
This is Karen Swallow Pryor now. What we read and who is reading has profound implications for what our world will look like, because deep reading stretches and prepares our brains for the receptiveness of meaning and truth. Does that make you want to run through a brick wall? That is awesome. That's not the greatest intro ever in sports. I don't know what is. Do you think that that Bulls team was the greatest of all time?
No, I think the 2019 Toronto Raptors are. No, seriously. Actually, I do. 72-10, and they won the championship.
I happen to think that the greatest team in history is the 1986 Boston Celtics. This is a famous passage. Check this out. Moses says, the Lord is going to raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your tribes. That fits, again, Jesus perfectly, because Jesus is that prophet. He's much more than a prophet, of course. He's God the Son. But according to his human nature, he comes from the tribes of Israel, specifically this tribe of Judah. Hey, the more children there are in this world, the more creativity that there is as well, and the more problems get solved.
We have so many connections and motions that we do physically in our Catholic faith. Sometimes we don't even think about it, but isn't it great that our actions in some way connect us to the practice of our faith? What if we take that out of the experience in Mass into the world? Every now and then I have a deep thought.
Oh, yeah. Any job, any honest job, any honest work can be sanctified, can be a path to God.
This is a fascinating conversation.
I'm a Protestant. What is adoration? Because a lot of times you guys talk about things, but you don't define them for people that may not be Catholic.
One thing I always tell people about the Bible and church doctrines, whether it's the Eucharist or anything else, is that there's nothing in the Bible that contradicts the Catholic faith, and there's nothing in the Catholic faith that contradicts the Bible, because the Bible is a Catholic book. It was written by Catholics. It was put together by the Church, the canon of Scripture of the New Testament. And so the good news for the Eucharist is that the Eucharist is one of the easiest doctrines of our faith to actually explain from Scripture. John chapter 6, that's a great place to go. That's a super key place to go, because Jesus' teaching on the Eucharist there is very, very clear. Producer Lucas Holt with the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Man, it's amazing how you can condense an entire week into 3 minutes. Awesome. Awesome job again, Lucas. Really appreciate that. Hey, we're going to try to squeeze in one little quick phone call here. We're going to go to Eileen, who's calling from New Jersey. Eileen, welcome to the show. We've got about 30 seconds here. What did you want to tell us?
I'll make it quick. I went to Tyburn Abbey, and I would like our fellow Catholics to support the place. No one knows it's there, and it's amazing.
Yeah, little monastery that's on the site.
Yes, it looks like a little brownstone in a beautiful street in England, and easy to miss. And a sister will let you in downstairs where you could see the abbey, and you could see all the relics from that time, and it shows you that a lot of the aristocracy died for their faith. The queen's cousin.
Yeah.
And there's also, I'll just say this real quick, a relic hanging post.
Oh, the hanging post is there too.
It's a model of it. They were killing so many people. They made it a three-way hanging post.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I read about that. Yeah, let me jump in there, Eileen. Thank you for we're just running out of time here. I'm so, so sorry. But thank you for mentioning Tyburn Abbey. And if you want to check that out, if you're in England, if you find yourself there in the London area, please do visit that place because it is the site of a lot of holy martyrdoms, to be sure. Really quickly, errors and omissions. Patrick.
Yes. Jim Farley, you mentioned, is the brother of Chris Farley. That is incorrect. He is the cousin of Chris Farley. So
okay.
Still related, but not the brother.
Thank you for disabusing me of that notion. What else?
So
and then Anne Hathaway, that is her real name.
That is her real name. That is her birth name. Okay, not a stage name. All right. And Matt Beardsley, who produces Morning Air, he also wanted us to know that Chris Farley was really into Eucharistic adoration in New York when he was filming Saturday Night Live. So how about that? Let's pray for the repose of his soul. Lucas Holt produced. Awesome week that was today. Karen Moran trying to deal with her dog all the time. Mikey, you love him. He's part of the show too. Patrick Alog screened the calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.